translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Jai. O original source of strength and scientific knowledge, all obeisances unto you. You have accepted the differentiated mode of passion from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. With the help of external energy, you are born of the unmanifested source. All obeisances unto you. Purport. The Vedas are the original scientific knowledge for all departments of understanding. And this knowledge of the Vedas was first impregnated into the heart of Brahma by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Brahma is the original source of all scientific knowledge. He is born directly from the transcendental body of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, who is never seen by any creature of this material universe and therefore always remains unmanifested. Brahma is stated here to be born of the unmanifested. He is the incarnation of the mode of passion in material nature, which is a separated external energy of the Supreme Lord. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyati Deshitarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So first of all, I would like to seek the blessings of all the devotees assembled here today, especially all the senior Vaishnavas. We have Deepak Prabhu, and every time I look at Deepak Prabhu, I think I should go on Harinam soon. It's like his presence is almost threatening. Have you been on Harinam? I think whenever you get initiated, if your name is not Harinam Das, I don't know what else it would be. thank you. Prayojan Prabhu's blessings as well. Sachirani Mataji at the back and other devotees. I'm sure there's other devotees at the reception and also devotees online. So I would like to seek your blessings so I can say something useful for my own purification and also share some thoughts on the matter. So first of all, there's some interesting things that Prabhupada is talking about in the purport here. And he mentions how the Vedas are the original source of all understanding, not just spiritual knowledge, but everything, because the Vedas are all-encompassing. They have knowledge about Ayurveda, they have knowledge about the world, how to live a life, how to make money, finances, varnashram, everything, including spiritual knowledge. So the Vedas are an all-encompassing body of knowledge. And that knowledge was given to Brahma, because when you create a universe, you don't just need spiritual knowledge, you need everything, right? You need knowledge of the elements, you need kind of everything that you need to create a universe and keep it going. So Krishna imparts this knowledge to Brahma right at the beginning in his heart. And it's very important. And we're going to speak about knowledge a bit more, but that's an important point that Srila Prabhupada makes. And therefore, Brahma is the original source of all scientific knowledge. Today, scientists are coming up with so many different things, experimenting on different matters, but this knowledge in this purport, Prabhupada is saying, is already there in the Vedas. So we're just trying to figure it out through our own ways by experimentation, but you will come to the same conclusion because the world has been created by Brahma based on the knowledge that he was given, and that knowledge is permeated everywhere in the world. So whether you do experiments, don't do experiments, you will come to the same conclusion that is there in the Vedas. So you might as well save yourself the hassle and listen to what's there in the Vedas. So that is another import that I'm getting from what Prabhupada's trying to say. Another interesting thing is that in the Vedas, many places, it does appear about this of God being unmanifest. And Srila Prabhupada explains here that Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, or the Vishnu from whose navel comes the lotus flower on which Brahma is born, and he creates the universe. So that Vishnu, nobody's really seen him, because technically, if you look at the structure of the universe, the whole universe is created inside the stem of the lotus flower. That's what it explains. Everything is there within that little stem. And So the only person, or nobody's really seen him, and that's why he's mentioned as unmanifest. It's not that he's not present. It's not that he's a body of energy in the ether or something like that. He's there, but no one's seen him. And if no one's seen him, then to their eyes, he's unmanifest. Okay? And so Brahma is said to have been born from the unmanifested Vishnu. And he is the lord of the mode of passion. Because to create something, you need passion. Okay, without passion, you can't create anything. So Brahma is given this mode of passion. But interestingly, Brahma seems very calm, isn't it? I mean, I don't know Brahma's personality, so I don't know him personally. But I don't know, in whatever movies I watched, or whatever little Krishna I watched, or, you know, wherever you've seen, Brahma's always very calm. He's got a beard, and he's very, Bhanu, oh Bhanu. And it's just like very, speaks very calmly and silently. But it's interesting how he's very calm, if that is true. But he is literally the abode of the mode of passion and all the passion that you need to create. So and Prabhupada says that Brahma is not influenced by the mode of passion, but he needs the passion to create things, but he himself is not influenced by it. So it doesn't manifest in his personality, but he can use it to do things. And I think that's a very interesting lesson there for all of us, that we want to be in the mode of goodness, but at the same time, we want to create things and we want to spread the movement, which kind of requires passion. So you can sort of have the mode of passion to create things and do things, but still remain in the mode of goodness. So you can use passion without being influenced by it. How to do that, I don't know. That's for you to figure out. But those are some important things from the purport. But one thing I really started to focus on was this aspect of this knowledge of the Vedas that is present in, that is given to Brahma at the beginning, and how this knowledge is very important, because the world needs to have a basis of understanding. Like, let me give you an example. Like nowadays, the financial system in the world is all based on a floating currency, isn't it? A few decades ago, the gold standard was abolished, okay? So currencies were based on gold and how much gold you hold, and that was a benchmark. Nowadays, it's not really like that. It's all based on stocks and the stock market and how businesses are doing and how the flow of money is going. That's what determines currency. It's a very floating currency, and that's why every few years we have a recession when things are not going well and everything takes a dip. And then after a while, everything goes back up again. And it's up and down, up and down. It's very, because there's no standard. Everything's floating. Okay? And I was thinking it's very similar in the world of, like, what motivation people hold in the world. What's the basis of people's knowledge? That is also very much floating. Okay? There is no underlying basis of knowledge. Like here, like Prabhupada says, Brahma was given this Vedic knowledge to hold and teach everything from. So that's like a baseline, sort of like a standard of knowledge. But nowadays, we don't really have a standard of knowledge in the world. It's whatever you find in the world, and sometimes it's great, and sometimes you change it after a while, and everything's very floating, and even the knowledge is floating, and hence society is just functioning based on a floating philosophy. So I was thinking about this, and what is people's motivation in living, okay, in the world? What is it that keeps the world going? Okay, what is it that keeps the world going round and round? So people generally have three types of motivations or philosophies. One is, a lot of people live with an existential motivation, okay? So their purpose in life, or their motivation behind life, is let's just survive, okay? The whole purpose of life is to survive, so their life consists of working, making money, paying your bills, kind of having a holiday here and there. And it's very existential. That is the motivation behind life. For others, some of them, it's financial, okay? There's a financial motivation behind life. So life is all about making money, and let's make as much money as we can, and let's invest money here, and let's put money there, and let's kind of, you know, they're just, motivation is money. It means that even if they fail, because their motivation is money, they will figure out a way to make money. Like if Bill Gates went bankrupt for whatever reason, he's not going to stay poor. He'll figure out a way to make money, because that's his sort of underlying motivation. So there's an existential motivation, there's a financial motivation, and then sometimes, very rarely, but in a very small percentage of the world, people have more of a philosophical motivation for existence. Now, I think personally that it is important to have a philosophical motivation, because then you have a purpose, and sort of a purpose in living, and it's not just existential, and your purpose is not based around making money or something like that. There is something deeper, and there is something philosophical which is driving your existence in the world. You're not just hanging around because you want to survive, because somebody put you here, and now you have to survive because now you're here, and it's kind of difficult to die. I mean, it's not difficult to die, but it's sort of painful. It's the unknown. We don't want to die, so let's just survive. I think that's a very bad motivation to live. And making money, I think, is also a very bad motivation, because I think money after a certain amount sort of becomes irrelevant. You know what I mean? Like, if someone gave me like £1 million, I could use it. You know, I could buy a house, and I could, you know, buy a nice car, and I could, you know, like put some money in investments and get some, you know, dividends and sort of carry on living and have fun. I could live. If someone gave me $10 million, I don't know what I would do with it. Like, I could use about $1 million. I wouldn't even know where to use the money. Like, how, what would you spend? And someone gives you like a few billion. I don't know, where would I use that money? It's like, you know, what do you do with it? It's like, there is a verse in the Bhagavatam which talks about, like, how much space do you need? No, actually, it's in the Vamanadeva sort of pastime, where Bali Maharaj asks him, like, how much land do you want? He goes, well, I just need 3 steps of land. He goes, really? I can give you women. I can give you like money. I can give you so much and acres of land. He goes, well, while I lie down, I just need like 3 steps of land. He goes, what am I going to do with the rest of the land? So it's very interesting. After a while, everything becomes irrelevant. So existential sort of motivation is not the best. A financial motivation is very irrelevant. So philosophical motivation or a purpose to life is very, very important, because if you don't have a purpose, and this is also like people are working on this scientifically as well, that it's said that if you don't have a purpose in life, then you may have everything in the world, but you will still remain unfulfilled. It's very interesting. You have everything in the world, but you still remain unfulfilled because you don't have a purpose. And this purpose is very important, and this purpose is what keeps you going. And in the Krishna consciousness movement, we have a purpose, and our purpose is beyond existential. Our purpose is beyond just financial or whatever it may be, but our purpose is more philosophical. We want to have this loving relationship with Krishna. There's a spiritual purpose to things, and it's very important. But a lot of people in the world, the generic knowledge in the world today does not really go after the understanding that there is a life after death. And I find it very interesting how people don't really believe in life after death, but they still worry about what happens after they die. It's very interesting. Like, I got a letter through the post the other day, and it was from a funeral company, and it said, open up to claim your £100 discount. So I opened up the envelope, and it said, have you booked your funeral? It said, a funeral costs about £4,900 as an average in the UK. But if you book it with us now, because you never know when you need it, you will get £100 off. And I think it's a very good, I mean, in one sense, it's okay. If you have, I think personally, my view is that if you got people looking after you, or if you got relatives, I think it's okay. Don't worry about your funeral. They'll figure it out. I don't think you need to worry about how they're going to burn you after you die. They can, you know, let's try and figure out what we're going to do in this life right now. If you don't have anybody, then I guess you should book a funeral. But because anything could happen anytime, you know, you never know. But there were all these caskets, and there was one which was like a gold-plated casket. Guess how much it was? £22,000. Now, why would I want to burn £22,000? Or why would I even care what casket I go in after I die, you know, to burn? So that's something people are worried about, but it's like a big thing, you know, like planning a funeral. It's like an important part in everybody's life. Another thing I find interesting that came up, it was on the news the other day. I don't know if you looked at it, that the general way they do cremations, I don't know why I'm talking about cremations. I guess I'm on the point, so I might as well talk about it. The general way, the two most common ways are usually it's a burial, where you buy a plot of land and then you get buried there. And the other way is through burning, okay, a cremation. But cremation causes a lot of like pollution in the world. So they're saying that, you know, you're creating pollution while you're living, and now you're polluting the environment after you're dead as well. So there's a way we figured out we can do a cremation without affecting the environment. And there's this new thing which is being rolled out in Scotland and very soon in England. It's called water cremations. So basically what happens is they take your body, it's a bit gross, but they take your body and they put it in hot water and potassium hydroxide, which is an alkali. And so it just, and they leave it there for under pressure for a few hours, and basically it just dissolves your body and you get like your, everything turns into slush. So it is like a body slush, and they just get rid of it. Then they take your bones, they dry them and they grind them, and then they give them to you in a nice little, yeah. So instead of ashes, that's what you get. So, and that way, you don't have to leave a carbon footprint after you die. you can, you know, you can just avoid all of that. So it's interesting how people are thinking about everything, about whatever people don't believe in, but they're still thinking about, like, how, what happens after that? How am I going to leave my legacy? Well, why does it matter about your legacy? You're dead, and you're not going to come back to see what people are thinking of you. So, but still people are want to leave a legacy, do a cremation like this. I want people to come and say these things at my funeral. I want people to have a good time at my funeral. Yeah, I think what's more important is what's your approach and what's your purpose in life while you're alive, and what sort of a difference are you going to make in the world? Now, interestingly, now here's another thing. Knowledge is there, the philosophical knowledge is there, but I think it's very important that we learn how to use that in a way that is relevant today. Like, people are generally concerned, like I said, about existential problems, people are concerned about money and all these things, and I think it would help us a lot if we can figure out ways to use the philosophy that we have to use it in a way that helps people address these problems. So I'm not saying that you use the philosophy to make money or whatever like that. But what I'm saying is that people relate to these concepts. And so if you want to spread Krishna consciousness, you have to be able to present the philosophy in a way that they can understand. Okay? And you have to make it relevant to the world. And because if we just quote stories and philosophy and stuff like that, people are like, yeah, that's nice. And sometimes they use philosophy as an escape. I know because I've been sharing Krishna consciousness to new people for the last 10-15 years, as I'm sure a lot of you have been doing as well. But I find that a lot of times you get different types of people. You get people who are curious, who want to come and want to learn more, but they have no intention of dedicating themselves to the philosophy. They're appreciative, they come, and they would come to a kirtan once a while, and they would come to a program once a while, but they got absolutely no intention to make any change in their life. It's like an escape for them. But instead of an escape into the pub or an escape somewhere else, it's like a more mode of goodness type of escape. So people like a bit of kirtan now and then, they'll be grateful. But nothing ever changes. And I've seen people come for like years and years and years, and they're very grateful, they're very nice, and they come, but nothing ever changes in their life. So sometimes people use it as an escape. And another type of person you get is people who are a bit more curious and who want to change and who want to take this philosophy and implement it in their life. And I think they can only do that if you make it relevant to them, especially in the Krishna consciousness movement, because we are trying to reach for the highest thing we can possibly achieve, which is love of Krishna. Okay, that is the highest thing you can possibly achieve. In many other traditions, it's not like that, philosophical traditions. It's more like, you know, Prabhupada talks about how Christianity, you pray about God, give us today our daily bread. And in a lot of religions, God is there to help you facilitate your day-to-day life. Whereas in Krishna consciousness, it's not like that. It's you asking, how can I serve God and how can I establish this relationship? But people are very concerned with what you can give them. So sometimes we have to make this philosophy relevant because that's all they can relate to. I know Narada Muni makes it relevant. It may not be the highest principle, but he looks at the situation and he uses it in a way that a person can understand. And one of the most amazing stories I find is when Narada Muni is asking the hunter to kill. You know, there's a hunter, you know that story where there's this hunter who gets like some sort of a sadistic pleasure from half-killing animals. And he's half-killing animals, and Narada Muni is there thinking like, if I ask him to stop killing, he's not going to do it. He's not going to do it because that's not his thing. He likes to see things killed. So then Narada Muni says, well, you should kill them fully. Put them out of their misery, you know, just kill them fully. Now, it's very interesting that he says that because you would think that at least he would make an attempt to say like, no, actually, don't do it. Can you stop doing this? No, he just says, kill them fully. Now, violence is not what we promote. In fact, one of the four principles that we follow is based on non-violence. It's one of the legs of Dharma, non-violence. And non-violence is what we usually promote. But in this case, where a person was inflicting violence on somebody, Narada Muni says, finish the job, put them out of their misery, because that's what they could relate to. So, now I'm not suggesting that you sort of promote that to people, but I'm just using it as an example. Although people kind of relate to that a lot nowadays, isn't it? Like if you watch films or, you know, if like, or just like, you know, certain organizations who look after animals. Okay, if an animal is not capable of being rescued or if it's suffering a bit too much, what they do is they just put them down. Okay, there's a certain organization that shall remain unnamed for the purpose of this Bhagavatam class, but they are there for protection of animals and to prevent cruelty of animals. And they put down 20,000 dogs a year in the UK. 20,000 dogs are put down by this organization because they are suffering. Shri Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Gaura Nitai Ki Jai. Okay, so sometimes people have this, people are more afraid of suffering than death. Death is meant to be like a good thing. If you're suffering, then you know it's better to die because then it puts you out of misery because there is no concept that life carries on afterwards. So people think when you die, it's all over, so put them out of their misery. But it's interesting how Narada Muni tells a hunter to kill because he's trying to utilize the knowledge and share it in a way that people understand and people can relate to things. So my point here is that in today's world, we are trying to share Krishna consciousness and we can try to share it through preaching Krishna consciousness directly and sharing stories and things like that. But I think what really helps, if you can make it very, very relevant to people and speak to them on the level they are at. It is said the art of a preacher, art of a good preacher is not that he can explain complicated topics, but that he can explain complicated topics in a very, very simple way. In a very simple way that the person with the least amount of knowledge in the audience can understand it, and then you build them up to a level that everybody can understand. So it's about simplifying things, making things more relevant in our preaching and Krishna consciousness. And I guess this is on the forefront of my mind because I'm thinking like how we can reach out to more and more people through our philosophy, because I've tried things where you try and speak philosophy and it works to some degree, but people don't generally relate to it. And nowadays, podcasts are a big thing. If you go online, if you go on Spotify, there's all these podcasts and everybody's talking about everything in the world. There's like podcasts. The biggest podcasts in the world are podcasts on finance, interestingly. Podcasts on finance are biggest. And you go on Spotify and you just get podcasts and podcasts of people working about money and finances, and everything's got like 1 million views and 2 million views. And I put something up and I get like 4 views. I'm like, okay, you know, why are people not watching my content or listening to my content? So I guess the idea is there's things people are interested in. And if you utilize that as a way of sharing Krishna consciousness with them, then I guess they'll relate to it a bit more. But if we just live in our own bubble and try and share philosophy with people, then you'll kind of only hit people who are sort of philosophically inclined, and maybe they just need a bit of philosophy here and there. They may not be ready for Krishna consciousness, or they may be, I don't know, but I think I'm just thinking about how Krishna consciousness may be spread by making things relevant. And if you listen to Srila Prabhupada's lectures, Prabhupada makes it very relevant. He always, like, he never just speaks philosophy. In all his lectures, he always gives analogies of the world, and he'll talk about, oh, these scientists, they came up with this thing and this thing, but they don't understand how does this going to work, how does this work. Instead, Krishna consciousness works like this. So he's always, if you listen to every Prabhupada class, there's always an analogy or a story, and he always makes it relevant to the modern world in terms of preaching. So I guess in our preaching also, we should look at how we can make Krishna consciousness relevant to people. And if you share it in a way that they find something in it, but you share it in a Krishna conscious way, then I guess we can reach more people. It is very important, however, to not go wishy-washy and dilute the philosophy. Because sometimes there is a tendency that we get too wishy-washy and we never really talk about the philosophy at all. We just talk about good things and nice values and, you know, things like that, which is still good. I think you're trying to elevate a whole mass of people, which is nice. But I guess we should talk more about Krishna consciousness, which is important. So anyway, that's what I had. I had a few other things, but I think I can talk about it later if there are no questions. And we have about 7 or 8 minutes if anyone has any questions or comments or anything you'd like to discuss. Yes, Hare Krishna Mataji. Thank you.
Oh, Hare Bo.
Is it on, Vishal?
You were talking about funerals.
About?
Funerals.
Funerals, yeah.
And I just had a really nice experience with Lord Chaitanya's mercy.
Okay.
Somebody asked me to organise a funeral for them. They weren't a devotee, weren't following the principles. And so I asked Kripa Moya. And so I went through with it, and she was like, yes, yes, yes. And she ended up having this amazing death with Srila Prabhupada playing, children chanting, Radhika Kulananda's Harinam Chadar on. Anything auspicious that could have gone into that coffin went Toti Gopinath's Tulsi leaf. And then we flew the devotees over, and we had a big kirtan. Adi Guru gave a talk, Aarti. We cooked a big feast in ghee, you know, and none of these people knew about Krishna, and they were completely quiet and listening, and they were blown away. And it sort of really helped my faith, because I always think of all the things I'm not doing. And Krishna was there, Lord Chaitanya was there. And we are so fortunate. And the same thing happened with the father that had died 5 months ago. It wasn't like they'd read a book or anything, but at the end, we're so fortunate. You know, the way Lord Chaitanya sees people is different to the way I see people. And for some reason, he wanted to just be there. And she got the benefit of about 70 people taking prasad here in the kirtan.
Mm.
So I just wanted to share that.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, you can even preach through your funeral. You can preach while you're alive, and you can preach after you're dead.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the nice class. You were just talking about Srila Prabhupada giving analogies to enable people to understand more clearly. Just reminded me of a class I heard yesterday, Prabhupada class. He talks about how you can't receive water or gas or electricity unless you pay the bills.
Yeah.
So if you don't pay the bills, you know, all your supplies are going to be cut off. So similarly, he said that so Krishna supplies us with free sunlight, water, and so on. But there is a cost to that, even though it's free, and that is yajna. So you have to perform sankirtan yajna or the, you know, some sacrifice.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the supply will be restricted. I thought that was such a brilliant analogy. It explains very clearly why, you know, we have to perform a sacrifice.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. I also, since you mentioned, I'm also remembering, there's an amazing book about Srila Prabhupada, which I only recently read, which it's not out there in the open. It's called Light of the Bhagavat. You know that book? It's the book, I think it's one of the first books that Prabhupada wrote when there was an opportunity for him to go to Japan and share Krishna consciousness. And it didn't really manifest for whatever reason. But I think he wrote the book because he knew that Japanese people are into like nature and things like that. So he takes a whole chapter of the Bhagavatam. And then some analogies that Prabhupada uses are just like next level in that book. It's like things I've never heard about. It's a completely different style of writing. And Prabhupada uses analogies from nature and from the, you know, spring in Vrindavan. And then he relates that to Krishna consciousness. And it's just amazing. If you get a chance, you should read that book, Light of the Bhagavad. Beautiful book. But yeah, sorry, it's just a comment that came off your comment. Thank you. Taruna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. You are an experienced preacher. But in terms of presenting Krishna consciousness, rather than wrapping ourselves at the beginning in some kind of spirituality, never to tell people that we are actually Krishna's devotees, and when you step on that path, it's very difficult to present yourself fully. You can't be satisfied. This is very kind of, let's say, you come on the bridge, you never come out from the bridge, which quite number of devotees doing. And it's for them to be disclosed as Hare Krishna devotees would be disaster, total disaster. So rather than that, in the beginning, they should know who we are.
Yeah.
Like the other day, I was listening nice, like a series of lectures from one very, very good preacher. Now is in Hrishikesh, there is a Kirtan festival, and there is questions and answers. His name is Kaustubha. He's so brilliant. Way he presents Krishna consciousness to new people, spiritual seekers, mostly to Westerners, is a brilliant way of answering, and totally on the line of Guru Shastra Sadhu, but such a way that is amazing, they know. He said, I don't force you or emphasize that you accept Krishna, reincarnation, karma, but I'm representing this tradition, that's me, and there's other way, there are the views, but this is me. And he presents Krishna consciousness in such a brilliant way. So it's much more pacifying for the mind. Can you imagine if you try to hide and it's, oh God, it's terrible. Or like speaking lies, you have to cover the lies with the lie, with the lie, with the lie, never ending up. So directly preach Krishna consciousness, there's also plausibility. They have to know who we are at the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's much easier for everybody to...
Yeah, 100%. Thank you. Yeah, that's exactly my point, that we shouldn't dilute anything. People should know who we are. But you explain things in a way that people can relate to it. So it's not like you're... Like Prabhupada never shies away from explaining the point that we are Krishna devotees. And he's very direct, but he uses analogies. He explains things in a way that people can relate to it, like that analogy you said and things like that. So I feel it's very important to be who you are, be very direct in preaching, but you just explain it in a way that people see that this is not a religious sort of cultish preacher trying to preach to me. But they hear you and they go like, yeah, this makes sense, what they're talking about. But yeah, I know, it's a whole slippery slope. If you try to hide yourself, then it becomes very difficult because then you're afraid of mentioning Krishna because you think if I mention the K word, then they're going to go away and they're going to think this has a religious motivation or whatever. So, yeah, there's also the other extreme to that is just You just share Krishna consciousness in a way that is totally irrelevant. My wife was, the other day, she took the baby for a walk. Well, not walk, in a pram, he doesn't walk yet. But she was out in Watford town center, and where that Taco Bell is, where the devotees sometimes stand on a Saturday and do Harinam, well, you would know, of course. There was there's always this Christian guy who puts his speaker out and he speaks totally irrelevant things. And then it's interesting how like, I'm just thinking, I'm not putting him down or anything, but I'm just thinking, why does he think that people are going to come and listen to them, especially if you try and make them feel bad, if you're just shouting at them, telling them that they're really bad people doing horrible things, and then why do they expect people to, I don't know, what is he expect? Is he expecting that people are going, oh yeah, you, that makes a lot of sense, yeah, I'm an idiot, maybe I'll come and join you. So the point is, you can be direct and you can be totally irrelevant and condescending, but and then the other extreme is where you're so wishy-washy that you never really mention anything spiritual or anything Krishna related. You're just talking about nice things, how to be nice, how to be good in the world, how to, you know, not steal your neighbor's donkey or whatever, you know. So that's not going to take you anywhere. So I think the best ground is, we are who we are, this is who we are, we're Krishna devotees, and we're explaining our philosophy to you, but in a way that is relevant to you, so you can understand it, and you don't have to like give everything up. Whereas you can take Krishna consciousness and just practice it in your life like that. Then people will relate to it. I think in a lot of traditions, you don't have to really like change much. I was thinking about this. Why do people find it so difficult to become Krishna conscious? Because we ask people to change too much. You know, you have to give up meat, you have to give up alcohol, you have to stop this and you have to not do that. Plus you have to find 2 hours out of your day to chant. People can't find 2 hours. They're like, oh, well, where am I going to find 2 hours from, you know, to chant and stuff like that. Whereas if you want to be something else, like if you want to be a Christian, all you need to do is believe in Jesus. There's nothing extra you need to do. Maybe go to a church once a while on a Sunday. And then it's just changing philosophy, but you're not really changing much else in your life. You can still carry on eating what you're eating, doing what you're doing. And a lot of other religions and traditions, you don't really have to change much. But we're asking people so much, like literally turn your life around if you want. And I guess that change is important because, like you said, there is a price to pay. If you want the best thing, you have to pay the highest amount. There is a price to pay. But the easier we can make it for people to understand, then slowly they will inspire themselves to take things further. But yeah, but direct, but keep it simple. That's a very good point, Taruna Prabhu. Thank you. I think we should stop there. It's 8:30. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol.